This is the Hoboken Grace Podcast. Whether you're in the car or enjoying a walk, we hope you're having a great day. Just like every weekly conversation, we hope today's message deepens your relationship with God and builds into your life in a helpful way. For access to our full podcast library, visit hobokengrace.com or our app.
Well, good afternoon and welcome. If I haven't had the chance to meet you, my name is Chris. I'm lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace. And I was just thinking this as I was standing here because I realized there's a lot of you I haven't met. If I haven't had the chance to meet you, come up and meet me, please. I will be after the service just any Sunday. It doesn't have to be today. You're like, I don't know if I can do it today. It can be later, but I would like to meet you. That would be awesome. And so I hope that you'll take the opportunity to do that because as our church continues to grow, there's just more and more people that I haven't had the chance to meet. We were doing a baptism before this, and she's like, it's great to meet you. I was like, yeah, it's great to meet you too. And so... But as we come together today, we are in the middle of this conversation called The Real Jesus, and we have been moving through the eyewitness account, John's eyewitness account of Jesus' life, and really evaluating, okay, is how I see Jesus who he actually is? And maybe you've heard a lot of different things from a lot of different places, and all of us, we kind of have this idea of who Jesus is, but is it actually accurate? And so what we've been doing is just moving through this entire eyewitness account. Today, we're going to get to chapter 13. Last week, we were in chapter 11. We've been going chapter by chapter, and we planned this out, and we thought we'd planned it so well, but we totally forgot in the planning that we had child dedication in the middle of it. And so because of that, we realized, well, we're going to have to skip one chapter. What chapter will it be? And 12 was the loser. So 12 lost. We skipped chapter 12. It's not because it's not important, but here's the thing. Here's the great thing about it. All of you have access to it. So you can read it anytime that you would like. But we're going to jump ahead to chapter 13. And when we make the shift to chapter 13, it's fairly significant because John begins to share the final days of Jesus's life. And we wanted to make sure that we didn't skip any of the chapters in there. So we're going to jump ahead to chapter 13 and we begin to see kind of those final moments leading up to the moment where Jesus is going to give his life. I'm going to jump in verse 1, and it says this: it was just before the Passover feast. Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. So Jesus knows, okay, the time's come. They've been trying to kill me. Now the time is here. He knows what's right around the corner. He says this: having loved his own who were in the world, it's talking about his disciples, he now showed them the full extent of his love. That's not specific to this story in particular, it's specific to what it is that he's about to do in the fullness of his love and how he's going to give his life for them. It continues, it says, the evening meal was being served, and so they're together in this room, the evening meal is being served, and the devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, so Judas had already made up his mind, he was going to betray Jesus, son of Simon, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put, we're going to come back to this verse, so pay attention to it. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal. So they're sitting around the table, and apparently they had already sat down for the meal, which kind of impacts this story a little bit as well. Took off his outer clothing and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. So a little bit of context on this story. Inside of this culture, when you would arrive at someone's house, there was typically a servant or a slave to wash your feet. Because of the fact that they traveled with sandals, their feet were really dirty. And when they ate, they didn't sit down at chairs. What they would do is they would recline around the table. And when they reclined, your feet would be near someone else. So you did not want someone else's dirty feet that just came in off the street to be near you. So they would have someone there to be able to wash the feet of the people who entered. It was typically the lowest slave. This is why John uses this earlier in the story when John the Baptist uses this picture where he says, when he sees Jesus coming to him, he says, listen, I'm not even worthy to untie his sandals. In other words, I'm not even worthy to be the lowest servant in the household that he arrives at. That's what John the Baptist is talking about when he says that. And that would typically be what happens when you would arrive at someone's home. Now, in this situation, it doesn't seem like anyone is there besides them. It's a little bit of a secret location because remember, they're already trying to find and kill Jesus. And so whatever the situation is, they arrive and no one washes their feet. We don't know if there aren't any servants there. We don't know, but either way, no one washes their feet. And it seems that they even get to the point where they are sitting down for the meal and still no one has washed their feet. I'm imagining if you put yourself into the story, and Luke actually gives us a little bit more color on this story, a little more background on the story, because Luke says that as they're approaching the meal, that the disciples are arguing over which one is greatest. And so they're going back and forth on which one's most significant. And when Jesus is in charge, who's going to be number two? Who's going to be number five? And they're going back and forth about who's most significant. And then they arrive, they're sitting down for the meal, and still no one has done this, which you have to think the disciples are looking around the room and thinking to themselves, like, it's not going to be me. Like, it needs to be somebody, but it's not going to be me. And we might not find out today who the greatest disciple is, but we will find out who the least disciple is. And they're all waiting to see, like, who is Jesus going to assign this to? Because then we'll know, well, you know, you barely made it. You barely made it. And still no one, Jesus doesn't assign it to anyone. And no one's done it. And then Jesus stands up and he puts on a towel and he begins to wash their feet. Now, don't miss this because John makes this really important connection that it can be really easy to read past. I want to take you back to that passage. It's the verse that I told you to pay attention to where it says this. It says, Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power. So Jesus knew his position and his power. Jesus knew that God had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. He understood his identity. And then John uses this word. So he got up from the meal. It's an interesting word, isn't it? So he knew this. So he got up from the meal. John makes a connection between what Jesus knew and then what Jesus does. Now, here's why this is really significant. If you are not secure in your identity, you'll never serve. Now, you may serve to look good to others, but you'll never truly serve. You may serve so that you can increase your position or increase how people think about you in terms of your value, but to be a servant, that will never happen. Why? Because when you aren't secure in your identity and your position, well, then you're constantly clamoring for recognition. You're constantly clamoring for significance. You're constantly clamoring to prove yourself. And this is the life that most of us live. We're trying to prove that we're valuable. We're trying to prove that we should be loved, that we're lovable. We're always trying to prove ourselves at work. We're trying to prove ourselves to our friends and look at me and what it is that I've done and what it is that I've accomplished. And look at the car that I drive and all of it. Like we live in a world. We're just constantly trying to prove ourselves. And so it's very rare to find a servant. And John says the two are connected. He says, because Jesus understood his position, his power, and his identity, he had the freedom to serve. When you're secure in your identity, you're free to serve. I don't have anything to prove. It doesn't matter what you think about me getting down here and washing your feet. It doesn't matter. It doesn't change anything about who I am or my value. Or you're free to serve. And this is important for you to not just understand this about Jesus, but this is important because I hope you know this. I hope you understand this. What Jesus did on the cross makes this possible for you. What Jesus does on that cross makes it possible for your identity to be set. When I accepted what Jesus did for me, I became a child of God. You can't take that from me. Doesn't matter what you think of me. You can't take it from me. You can't change it. It's set. I'm a co-heir with Jesus. You can do whatever you want to me. That's not going to change. And you can think whatever you want to think about me for the next few years, but one day you're going to see me as a co-heir with Christ. And if you've accepted what Jesus has done for you, that's true for you too. It's set. You want to talk about value? The Son of God was paid to buy you back. That value's set. I say this all the time. You can exchange the value Jesus gave you for some other value, but you're always moving in the wrong direction because there's nothing more valuable than the Son of God. Your value's set. Are you lovable? You're perfectly loved. All of that is set. And because Jesus understood that, and because he grasped that, he was able to, he had the freedom to serve and to love. So he begins to wash their feet. And it seems that he washes a couple of disciples' feet. And then he comes to Peter. And the reason I say that is because it says he came to Peter. Now, he could have come to Peter first, but that would be an odd way to say it. So when it says he came to Peter, it seemed that he had washed a couple of other disciples' feet first. And then he comes to Peter, who said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? It's a pretty obvious question. The answer is obviously yes. I think more of what's happening here is Peter's looking at Jesus and saying, okay, are we really going to do this? Is this really happening? Jesus replied, you do not know now what I am doing, but later you'll understand. That has to do with what he's about to say. No, said Peter, you shall never wash my feet. And once again, Peter tells Jesus what to do. Peter loves to tell Jesus what to do. He does it all the time. You shall never wash my feet, Jesus answered. Jesus answered Peter, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Now, this is a really interesting statement. And this has to do with a lot more than washing feet. So Jesus gets down and he begins to wash the disciples' feet. Peter's like, no, which I have to wonder, is Peter the first one to say no? Like, were the first couple just like, all right, cool. I like this. This is good. I'm good with this. Like, we give Peter a hard time about speaking out, but I feel like all of them should have spoke out. This should have been a group effort of, oh, wait, sorry, we really screwed this up. I don't know who it should have been, but it shouldn't have been you. But they don't, apparently, until you get to Peter, and Peter's like, I don't know, I'm not doing this. And then Jesus says this. He says, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Again, this is about more than just washing feet. And this speaks to, which is why I was so excited to talk about this passage, this speaks to what I think is one of the greatest barriers to people finding Jesus inside of our culture. And what I mean by that is this. Jesus is coming to Peter, and he's offering to serve him, and Peter's saying, no, I'm not going to let that happen. And then Jesus says, unless
unless I wash you, you have no part with me. In other words, what he's talking about is he's actually talking about what he's going to do on the cross and the fact that he's going to take all of our brokenness and all of our sin, and he's going to do in our lives what only he can do. He's going to make us clean again. And this is why he says to Peter, unless that happens, you have no part with me. In other words, we can't restore this relationship unless that's taken care of, unless that's made clean, unless you allow me to make you clean again. And here's the thing, and this is the significant thing he's saying to Peter in this moment. Peter, you can't do it. He doesn't say, you have no part with me unless your feet are washed. No, he says, unless I wash you. And he's saying to Peter, Peter, you have to allow me to do in your life what you can't do and only I can. Which means that in that moment, Peter had to humble himself and recognize that he needed Jesus to serve him. There's a humility to serving, but there's also a humility to recognizing that you need to be served. And he's stepping into Peter's story and saying, Peter, no, you need to recognize your need to be served. In other words, you need to recognize that you can't do it. And those three words, we hate those three words. In our culture, we despise those three words. I can't do it. Wait, that's four. Four. I don't know. Maybe I just messed it up in all the other services. But we hate those words because we from the time we were in kindergarten, we've been told, you can do whatever you want. You can do it all. You can do it. Adidas taught us forever. Impossible is nothing, right? Like, you can do it. And part of why you live here is because you actually believe that. You moved to New York because you're like, I can do it, and I can do it better than the rest of the world. I can do it. And you've lived your whole life that way, and the idea of saying, I can't do it, is so countercultural to you and goes against everything that you have believed about yourself. And God steps into your life and says, you're broken, and I can fix it. And you say, no, I can fix it. This is why, listen to me. This is why I'm convinced, especially for those who are wealthy and successful, that they're more attracted to religion than they are grace. Because you want to believe you can do it. You want a set of rules you can follow so that you can nail it and get it right and say, I did it. And Jesus doesn't offer that. Jesus says, no. You can't do it. But if you humble yourself and recognize that you need a Savior, I can. I mean, so many people who are so close to experiencing Jesus, but their pride keeps them from it because they don't want to acknowledge, I can't do it. I don't have it figured out. I don't know how it works. I can't do it. Listen to me, if you're looking for religion, you've come to the wrong place. And if you're looking for religion, you're not going to find it with Jesus. He comes to us and says, no. If you humble yourself, I can do in your life what only I can do. But you have to embrace that. This is so important in so many different ways in life. And so here's what I want you to do. On the count of three, I just want you to turn to your neighbor and say, I can't do it. Okay? No, wait. I said three. Wait. All right? All three services. People just started doing it right away. I feel like the instructions were very clear. All right, 1, 2, 3. Some of you are like, I forgot what to say. I can't do it. You just have to embrace it. It's okay. Listen to me. It's okay. It's okay. And that's what he's saying to Peter. Peter, it's okay. Let me do what only I can do. Peter doesn't get it, of course. Then, Lord, Simon Peter replied, not just my feet, but my hands and head as well. If that's the case, give me a bath. Jesus answered, a person who has had a bath only needs to wash his feet, but his whole body is clean, and you are clean. And then he starts to talk about the disciples as a whole, and you are clean, though not every one of you, for he knew who was going to betray him. And that was why he said not everyone was clean. I want you, just as a side real quick, just I want for you to imagine this moment, because you see this exchange between Peter and Jesus, and that's really significant. But the other thing that you see is that Jesus washes all the disciples' feet, and Judas is still there. What do you think it was like for the disciples after Judas betrays Jesus and Jesus is put on the cross and all that happens? What do you think it was like for them to think back about this moment and picture in their minds Jesus washing Judas's feet? Some of you walked in here today and you want nothing to do with God. For whatever reason, you decided to say yes to your friend. I just want you to know, and we say it all the time, but this is exactly why we say it. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter how you feel about him. He loves you. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I have done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. I tell you the truth, no servant is greater than his master, nor is the messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. And so he finishes and he says, okay, here's the deal, guys. I just set the example. Now, you do the same. We've talked about this throughout John, that Jesus came to live for a couple different reasons. One is he actually lives out the righteousness that we were called to live out so that it can be given to you. That's the righteousness of Christ that is given to you. The other reason is that he wants for you to actually see who the Father is. We talked about that last week, that you get to see the Father's heart when you see Jesus weeping. But another aspect, too, is that he gives us an example of what it means to follow well. He says, no, this is what it looks like to follow the Father well. He's giving us an example. And in this situation, he specifically calls it out. He says, listen, I've given you the example. This is what I want for you to do now. One of the most amazing things about God is that as you step into a relationship with God, God says, this is how I want for you to love me. Love them. This is how I want for you to love me. Love them. This is what I want for you to do. This is your act of worship to me. Love them. Serve them. Use your gift inside the body. In Romans 12, it says that. He's taught us all about grace. He says, so how does God want for you to respond to that? What is your act of worship? He says, I want you to give your life as a living sacrifice. How? By using the gift that God has given you inside of his family. That's how he wants for you to respond. That's how he wants for you to love. And as you move through this, Jesus says, okay, guys, now it's your turn. And as we move through this story, we have no choice but to look at it and say, okay, then how do I do that? You know, here at Hoboken Grace, there's a couple different reasons why we have impact teams, and we've got all sorts of teams. I don't remember exactly how many different teams that we have, but there's a couple different reasons why we have teams. One is to accomplish the mission, to help people find their way back to God, and we think that we do that best through teams. But the second is just as important, and that is this. We want to help you become like Jesus. Jesus calls us to make disciples. Unfortunately, oftentimes, this idea of discipleship, it's tied to the idea of information. And so people talk about discipleship as the gaining of information. What's your discipleship program? In other words, how are you teaching people information? Discipleship is not about information. Now, is information part of it? Yes. But discipleship is about transformation. It's about changing who I am. It's about changing the life that I live, specifically changing the life I live to be more reflective of the one who loves me most, the one who taught me how to serve, to become more and more like Jesus. And so one of the reasons why we have teams is for you to be able to obey what he calls you to in this moment and for you to become more like him so that you can serve his family, so that you can serve the people around you, so that we can serve and impact our community. And as I talk about this, I know, and I just want to take a second to say this, because I know a lot of you in here right now are already doing that. You're already on teams, and you're serving, and you're trying to figure out, okay, how do I serve as best as I can inside of his family? How do I use that gift to be able to live a life, a living sacrifice, to be able to love him through loving others? And I just want you to say, be encouraged. We do this all the time. You know, I struggle with this. Maybe you don't struggle with this, but I struggle with reading through Scripture, and as I read through Scripture, I pick up on all the things I'm struggling with. And I move right past all the things I'm actually doing. That is a massive mistake. You need to spend as much time with the things that you're already doing and celebrate the fact that, man, I'm doing that. I'm actually following well there. And some of you are here and you're on a team and you're serving and you're trying to figure out how to be able to serve the people around you as best as you can. And I just want to stop for a second and say to you, you're crushing it. You're crushing it. You're doing such a good job. And I love it. If you want to see something crazy, just show up about 45 minutes before the service starts on a Sunday. And you see them out here. This is insane. They use lasers to line up the chairs. Did you know that? They've just taken it to a whole different level. They're like, no, we got to get it really straight. So they have lasers that they come in and shoot down every row to make sure that the chairs are straight to be able to prepare for you as you come into today. And our team is preparing. We have a team that's part of a baptism and making sure that everything is set up. Our Next Steps team is... They're just pouring their lives into being able to serve and help people take next steps. It's unbelievable. And don't, when you come to a passage like this, don't just move past it. And take the second to be able to say, man, I'm not getting everything right, but I'm doing that. I'm doing that. And be encouraged by it. For others of you, you're here and you've been enjoying what God's doing and you're seeing God work and seeing God move. You're seeing other people find their way back to him, but you're still watching. You're still an observer. You're not a participant yet. You're still on the bench. It's time to get on the field. And oftentimes when we talk about teams, I talk to you about different motivations. I talk to you about the motivation of, man, you don't want to miss this opportunity and you want to see God work through you. You want to be part of this story. All of those things. Today I'm coming to you from a very different perspective because I'm coming to you from what Jesus has specifically shared with us. And I'm inviting you, listen, you need to be part of the team. Why? Because that's what it means to become like Jesus. You need to be serving. Why? Because that's what it means to become like Jesus. And he says, listen, I've given you the example. Now, follow the example. If you're going to follow well, you've got to step into serving. You have to step into serving. Decide, no. I want to be like the one who served me. I want to be like the one who loves me most. Your identity, your value is set. So serve. Serve. Today after the service, we're going to have all of our teams out there in front. They're all represented by different tables. There's a million different ways you can serve. Don't try to find the perfect fit. That's not the point. The point isn't the perfect fit. Jesus washing feet was not the perfect fit. Didn't matter. I'm here to serve. Start there. You'll figure out where you fit. This guy down front's been on like 19 teams. He knows that's true. Serve. Why? Because I know how I've been served. And I want to be like Jesus. Will you pray with me? Father, I thank you for this unbelievable moment. Jesus, for you demonstrated such incredible service. And Father, I pray that as we move forward from this story, that we would, that there would be this passion, this desire in us to follow your example. To live out what you lived out, not just in that moment, but what you've lived out in every one of our lives. And Father, I just want to pause for a second and pray for those that maybe pride is continuing to keep them from you. Maybe they're holding on to religion. Maybe they're holding on to, I can do it. I've got this figured out. I can make life work. Whatever it is, I just pray that today they'd let it go. That they'd realize it's okay. You don't have to have it all together. You don't have to have it figured out. It's okay. Because there's one who can make you clean. In Jesus' name.